where God shines through. Him and I are one, not two. I need not worry, fret, or plan. He wants me where and as I am. And if I be relaxed and free, He'll carry out His plan through me. Amen. Good morning. He came back. We have to be out of here by not too much after 11, so what we're going to do is we're going to go through step 11 and 12. I'm going to talk a little bit about 11 and Katie, and then 12 and we're gone. I'm really delighted to talk about step 11. I want you to know that what anything that I will ever share in Alcoholics Anonymous is not a indictment of any other way to do AA. It is just simply my personal experience. As a matter of fact, one of the things that is very valuable to me is that I've tried a lot of, in order to get to things that work really well, for a guy like me, you got to try a lot of things that didn't work as well to get to things that work a little better. And so what I'm going to share with you this morning is a combination of things I've done to bring me to a point to more align myself with what the book talks about. In the section on step 11 starts at the very bottom of page 85. And oddly enough, this was the one step in AA that I actually warmed up to. I mean, most of Alcoholics Anonymous I did kind of under the lash of alcoholism, but step 11 was actually attractive to me. See, I grew up in the early 70s, and we did meditation. I mean, we were into it. I mean, I loved to go to, I did TM, and I did yoga, different types of yoga, Divine Light Mission, I found knowledge there, all kinds of crazy stuff. I mean, I love meditation, because for a couple reasons. One is when you went to a yoga classes or meditation, or you learned the Yetta Mantra, TM, or whatever that deal is, it kind of elevated you above society. You know, you were just kind of, you could kind of humbly look down on the less enlightened people. I mean, it was like, really, there's a part of me that really likes that, you know? And also, you had a really good chance in a yoga or meditation class for two things. One is to get laid. And the other one was, there was always somebody who was really good marijuana in a meditation class. I mean, so the meditation was not a new thing to me. So I was excited because I'm the egomaniac with the inferiority complex, so it's not enough to me. I don't aspire to be another member of AA. I want to hold myself to such a state of spiritual perfection I glow in the frickin' dark. You know what I'm saying? I want to be up here. So meditation, I want to get to meditation so I can kind of transcend all the mundane people in AA. So I turned to the book and I start reading on the bottom of page 85. And instead, it starts a section on step 11. You know that because it says in italics, step 11. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, prayer and meditation. Yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. Okay. Lay it on me. And here's what it says. It says, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves? I remember reading this and just like this sinking feeling and confusion inside of me, like, this has nothing to do with meditation and prayer. This is not step on. This is crazy. This is inventory. And I'm wondering, was it a misprint? Should that have been on the previous page? Matter of fact, it's actually a more in-depth inventory than the questions on page 84 and 85. On 84, rather. And I thought, that doesn't even make sense. And I read a little further down the page, and there's a couple prayers. You know, we ask God down the next paragraph. We ask God to direct our thinking. We ask God for inspiration on the following page. We ask for especially freedom from self-will. There's several things that could be construed as prayers, but nothing that looks like meditation. I know meditation. And so what I did was an aspect of the ego, I suppose. I pushed the whole thing aside and never followed the directions because they do not agree with my preconceived or prejudiced judgment of what step 11 should be. I think a lot of us have a tendency. I think quite a few of us will do that with step 4. We'll look at step 4. We'll have a preconceived notion of step 4 is either a combination of one and two extremes, either some sort of Freudian psychoanalysis or some kind of Catholic confession. And when it doesn't match, we don't follow what it says in the book. We just write our life story, or we do, you know, whatever. We do. It's funny how hard it is for some of us to follow directions. When we're brand new and we're broken, we're very malleable. But the ego comes back. And you know, when the ego comes back, you don't know it came back. You never know it came back. It's just all of a sudden you're smart again. That's not ego. I can see. I'm that guy. So I don't do any of this. And what I started doing, it wasn't that I was against step 11, I wasn't. I just wanted to do stuff that made sense to this thing, which is here I'm trying to line my recovery up and be directed by my enemy again. So what I started doing was a whole bunch of stuff that I gleaned from people sharing in meetings. And it was, you know, something, it was all good. It really was. It was all good. I used to have a couple books I would read every morning, the 24-hour day book, and the day by day, I had another one, 24-hour, one day at a time. I sort of burnt those out, and then I went to the Prayer of St. Francis in the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions book at Step 11, and I did that for quite some time. I found another version of that that I liked even better and switched to that. I had it on a plaque in my room, and I the version that says instead of a channel, it's make me an instrument. I like that better for some reason. I guess maybe because I was tired of the other version. I don't know. I started exploring churches. I went to Unity. I went to Science of the Mind. I went to a Baptist church in Las Vegas where the preacher, the minister he didn't go to AA, but he said he was an alcoholic, drug addict, etc. And I went there for a little while. I went back to my church in my childhood, Catholic thing. I tried the rosary. It's a little too tedious for me. Churches are really good. They don't let me share. I don't stay long. I'm sad to admit that, but that's probably, there's probably more truth in that than I would like to admit. I went back and chanted Namne Yoho Renge Kyo with the SGI Buddhists. I started reading a lot of Zen stuff. I did Course in Miracles. I did yoga, breathing exercises. That thing, the prayer I opened with is a meditation I use sometimes to this day. It's very centering for me. I did a lot of stuff. And it's all good. It's none of it's bad. We have a tendency, when we find something better, to say that that was bad. It's none of it's bad. Matter of fact, the book is very open to this. In the bottom of page 87, it encourages guys like me to use this stuff. It says, be quick to see where religious people are right. I have a tendency to be quick to see where they're wrong. But it's encouraging me to 180 degrees to be quick to see where they're right. To look for the positive thing. Look for what can be positive in these approaches. And make use of what they have to offer. It's all good. I think what I've discovered is that it's all good and would have been better in addition to rather than in substitution for. See, I never even tried this stuff on 86 and 87 because it didn't make sense to me. And then I did this for years and years, all this other stuff. And one day a guy that I sponsored who was sober quite a while, well into double-digit sobriety, he came to me and he was very serious about step, wanting to get into step 11. And he was asking me point blank for specific direction on what to do. Well, I don't know what to tell him. I've done so many things, and they're all good, but none of them are really a home run. I mean, I couldn't point to any of the things I had done and as definitive. This is what you do. And so I told him what they will teach you to tell new guys in secret sponsor school. Do you guys have that down? Secret sponsor school? Oh, well. We got secret sponsor school. In secret sponsor school, they'll tell you if the new guy, one of the guys you sponsor, asks you a question and you don't have a clue. You have no idea what to say. You say one of two things. The first thing you say, A, is you tell them, just pray about it. If your sponsor says, just pray about it, what he's really saying is, I don't have a clue. I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about here. I don't know what to tell you. And I didn't give him that one. I gave him answer B, and answer B is he's going to say, just do what it says in the book. And I said, I wanted to get away from the question that the ego doesn't like questions that can't answer properly. So I want to get away. So I just said, do what it says in the book. Well, this guy, without prejudice, without judgment, without nothing that I'm full of, actually started literally doing what it says when I'm in Retiring Night, on Awakening, on page 86 and 87. Well, in no time at all, he just seemed to be doing better than I was. I don't like that. That's not good. And so I'm thinking, I'm watching this guy, and he's all of a sudden, he's more useful. He's helping more guys. He seems to be emotionally more even keel, more balanced emotionally. He's not as erratic as he used to be. Getting along better at work. And I thought, I'm going to do this. I'm going to start doing this. And I started doing it. And I started getting some results from it. And not very long, just a month or so of trying it. And I started really noticing that I was a little more even keel. The ups and downs were diminished. And I didn't understand the dynamic of it at first. That what was really occurring is that the exercises in the process on 86 and 87 that I frame my day with are designed to keep me more in line with the decision I made in step 3. I don't know that any of us ever gets totally surrendered behind the principle in step 3. Of total self-abandonment and service. Because our self-centeredness clamors so loud at us and it's so intrusive and so much our default position. But I think that this is designed to keep me in the zip code. Maybe not right on target, but at least it keeps me in the zip code of a surrendered, service-oriented, help others way of life. And that's what it's designed to do. And I about this period of time in my sobriety, I stumbled on a passage in the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions in Step 11, where all of a sudden I understood why this first paragraph on 86 is very in-depth inventory or self-examination. And in the 12 by 12 in Step 11, Bill says that self-examination, first paragraph. Meditation, things we're supposed to consider, the bottom of page 86 and 87. And prayer, self-examination, meditation, and prayer, when used separately. And I'm looking at them as if these are separate things. When they're used separately, the book says, can bring much benefit and relief. But when they're logically related and interwoven, as they are on these two pages, They create an unshakable foundation for life. Remember in the 12 steps and 12 traditions, it says something in step 3 that's very interesting. It says that the effectiveness of the whole AA program will rest on this decision. And it's not the decision in and of itself, it's the implementing of the decision that the effectiveness of the AA program is demonstrated. It's the decision in and of itself is, if it's not carried out, is not very good. It's the carrying out of the decision that lines me up and integrates me with you and with God and with myself. And which is a wonderful thing for those of us that have suffered this disease of separation. It's a wonderful thing. About that same time, a guy that I sponsored found a dictionary from, I think it was 1913, in a used bookstore, and he looked up the definition of the word meditation. And I was, when he showed it to me, it blew my mind. Some people grow up and they use dictionaries. I was not one of them. I didn't come from a group that did that. Not that they're a bad group, they just didn't have that thing. Nobody had taught them to use dictionaries. So we looked up the word meditation in the dictionary, and it amazed me. It talked about something that was very different than my preconceived notion of meditation, which is, you know, either chanting or the quieting of the mind and the blanking of, you know, the separating yourself from the chatter, etc., the things that I've learned in meditation. It used an example that really hit me, and the example is said a general will meditate a war. And boy, that hit me, because when I thought about that, and I went back to the book, and I read this section, the second paragraph on 86, with that in mind, and it says, on awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. Okay. I can picture in my mind a general getting up early in the morning before a horrible battle. And the night before, he's done an examination of his army and his assets. And he looked squarely at the liabilities of the army. And now as he considers his plans for the day, entering into this horrific battle, in our case, we bring God into this. In his case, he brings his officers in. And he says to his officers, those horses have to be pulled out of the army. They're lame. They cannot ride. This will not work. Those cannons over there are warped. We can't take them into this battle. Those men are wounded. They must be sent back to the medical tent and pulled out of the army. And he is divorcing his assets from his liabilities in order to go into the day and do what has been put on his plate. Does he want to fight the battle? Probably not. But it's been put on his plate. There's an old saying in AA that God will never bring anything to you that he doesn't bring you what you need to get through. And this is a design for living that will get you through a divorce, that will get you through a sick child, that will get you through a death in your family. It is the stabilizing and tethering exercise that keeps me connected to what my life is about, my purpose, my primary purpose, and the power behind the curtain. It keeps me integrated into this, and it's very, very important. We are we, when I say we, guys like me, myself especially, is very, very capable with good intentions and spiritual principles to just drift into the ozone and not even know I'm doing that, if I'm not tethered to anything. So this is one of the ways, this discipline is the one of the ways where God keeps me from leaving the barnyard, sort of. The questions in here on the top of 86 over the years have really been very, very helpful to me. You know, Katie did a great job last night on step 10. And step 10 is right now, right here, right now, has stuff promptly. Stuff occurs, take care of it. But it is in our nature, I think, to roll over stuff. You know, I mean, where you just, you were in a restaurant or you're at the grocery store and the woman's not taking care of you and you say something just sort of hurtful to her. It's not hurtful. You were pointing out her deficiencies publicly. I mean, she needed that. But anyway, later on, and you didn't go back and make amends, and there you are at the end of the day. And you're trying to go to sleep, and you're taking a review of your day, and there it is. If you've ever been to New York City, you'll see something in New York City often, that they'll do construction on these buildings that are 70 stories, 80 stories high. And they might be doing construction on the 60th floor, on the facade of the building. Mortar work, brick work, I don't know, whatever it is. And what they do is they put a series of nets underneath where they're doing the construction, because 70 stories up, you drop a hammer, whoo, I mean, that'll kill somebody. And that's not all they do. They'll have scaffolding on the ground floor around the base of the building, and then they have another series of nets on about the second floor or third floor coming up off of the scaffolding that catches everything that slips through the first nets. And I think that that's what this daily examine, because stuff, we leak. We leak. We're not bad people. We're busy. And sometimes we're just too, we just roll right over stuff. I have a way of doing that. My God, I have a way of doing that. But it doesn't go away, does it? I think I'm the kind of guy that if I have a stone in my shoe, I think if I run faster, it'll go away. No, that's bad. So I catch this stuff at the end of the day. The question that really has hit me over the years the most is was I kind and loving towards all? Towards all. If Alcoholics Anonymous is a program of self-abandonment and self and all its judgments, its prejudice and its opinions, and service, that means that God is trying to craft me. My position is to end up trying to be the guy that will love unconditionally, that will help God's kids. So I fall so short of that so often that when I ask myself the question, was I kind and loving towards all? Well, my God, there's people that don't deserve kind and loving. And what I realize, well, the minute I take that position, I am playing God. I've climbed again, once again, up onto the throne of judgment. And I'm in a state, rather than having an opportunity to be helpful and kind and really be that guy's, the bright spot in that guy's day, because I have judged him as being inappropriate or a bad member of AA or an irritating guy or somebody that's out of line, I will withhold my primary purpose from him. I will withhold and play God and not do what God has crafted me to do. And this is a remarkable exercise. Do you know, I wish I could do this more. I really miss a lot. But there have been times There have been times when I've had my head out of my butt enough, and I've been awake enough where I've run into people that are having a bad day, the kind of person normally you would get in a beef with, right, that are tagging it. You know those kind of people. And I will be awake, and I will see through the defense mechanisms, and I will see the pain. God, I wish I could do this more consistently. And I will talk to the person inside them. And you'd be amazed at what happens when you do that. You'll be the only person in their whole day. They're going through their whole day just attracting hostility because of what they're putting out. And you can be the one person that shines a light into where they're at. I had a doctor come into my store one day, and he was an asshole. No doubt about it. I mean, if you could, 100 people would ask, if you could take a poll, 100 people would not agree this guy's acting like an asshole. But I could see, and I said to him, I said, I suspect you're a lot like me. And that when I got things going on that are scaring me, or threatening me, or I'm having a hard time dealing with, is that I often get really uptight, and I don't mean to. And I suspect that something's going on with you, and I just want you to know that I'm a good listener. And I've had some very bad days in my life, and if you ever needed somebody to talk to, it blew this guy's mind. It actually turned out a little weird. He started almost stalking me after that. So where do you get this from? Well, I ended up telling him I went to AA. Well, I want to go to those meetings. Well, we have enough crazy people. Okay, yeah. Thank you. You're not an alcoholic. I mean, he wasn't an alcoholic. He was an alcoholic. He'd been great, but he wasn't an alcoholic. He's just a little odd. But the point is, I was able to do something really nice in his day. I think that with that guy, I was able to do what God would have had me do with him. Right? Now I want to wave the flag and show you the one I caught. I got thousands of them I've missed. Sometimes you'll see it at the end of your day. You'll see the waitress that was in a bad mood and how you reacted to her in a negative way and how maybe that was an opportunity. When you ask yourself the question, was I kind and loving towards all? And you realize, no, I was a little short with her, but she was up. There's another missed opportunity. See, this is where the light shines on my self-will. This is where, when I ask myself this question, I think more than anywhere else, I see how I've been playing God again. I see where I've been judgmental. I see where I haven't been God's go-to guy. But I don't beat myself up over that. The book says we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection because it diminishes our usefulness. It's not productive. But I acknowledge it every day and I try to recorrect the course, and if there's opportunities to make something right that I can make right, I try to go for it. And I think for most of us, by the time we start to employ this after a while, it loses all elements of beating yourself up, because it's not about that. It never was designed about that. It's just it's in it is a genuine acceptance of my own fallibility. Oh, I was selfish today, and I was unkind to people, and I was dishonest. Well, of course I was. I am a self-centered guy. I got alcoholism. Geez, Bob, no one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. But this is my vehicle to shine light on the truth and then recorrect my course and realign it back to this decision that I made in step three. This decision of self-abandonment and service. That I'm asking God to take away these difficulties with the bondage of self for one reason, and one reason only, so that victory over them, to whatever degree, the victory over them will bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. This never was about me. I am being crafted to serve. And in the serving is the rightness in here. In the serving is the usefulness. In the serving is the integration. Me with you, me with me, and me with God. Do you ever notice how you can prayer and meditation's great. You may get a little closer to God, but you will never get as close to God through prayer and meditation as you will when you're loving someone else and helping some new guy. You can't get it. I think that is then you're the channel. God's move. God is a presence within you. The book goes on to talk about it. It has a couple warnings. And Wilson was so inspired when he wrote this. I often read some of this and think, how did he know this about himself and us? But he knows how we are. We're very capable of living in the land of spiritual make-believe. I am very capable of getting out in the ozone and using the program to grandize myself and actually play God with spiritual motives. You know, crazy guy. Like Jim Jones, David Koresh, you know, all that stuff. And so he cautions us up here. And if you look in the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, it also talks about even the most spiritually advanced people will check their inspiration with someone. Matter of fact, if you're that spiritually advanced, why wouldn't you be humble enough to be suspect of yourself enough to go check it with someone? It's only the ego that would not want to do that. And it says the top of... I'm going to start at the bottom of 86. It says, in thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration and intuitive thought or decision, relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We're often surprised how the right answers come after we've tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. And then here's the warning as we start to become inspired. It says, being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact, it's not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. As a matter of fact, it says that if we did presume that, we might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. What would presume to be inspired at all times except the ego? There's only one mechanism in me that thinks it knows crap. And that's the ego. The spirit is never like. The spirit just is. The spirit is just a source of love and a channel for God. It doesn't presume anything. But the ego does. And the ego is alive and well. I've heard people in AA make crazy statements like, well, if they work the steps, they're no longer self-centered. Wow. I always look for the lobotomy scars. I can't do that. Wow. Wow, I'm impressed. It's not my experience. And I don't think it's theirs either. I think they'll lie about other things. if you don't doubt that, go spill coffee on one of those spiritual giants and see how surrendered they are. And then it goes on to caution. I can tell you a dozen stories about presuming to have the ego thinking it knows God's will and it's inspired when it's not. It will bring you into absurd actions and ideas. But in the next paragraph, and I want to talk about this and turn it over to Katie, it says, we ask especially for freedom from self-will, what self wants, what self judges, what self opinions, all that stuff, especially from freedom from self-will, and are careful to make no request for ourselves only. I have a friend that years ago used to say that he thought one of the more important words in the 12 steps was the word only in step 11. And I think that's an important word. When you think about it, anything other than only is a supposition that I know best. For years through my childhood, I was in Catholic school and they used to teach us about the Ten Commandments. And in the second commandment is, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. And I was taught by some very well-meaning people, and I think possibly because I had a tendency to have a foul mouth, that meant don't cuss, don't swear. And which is fine. I really try not to swear. Not because I think God annoys God. I mean, if a swear word could annoy God, that would be a powerful word. But because it might annoy you. And I would hate to have someone diss AA because of something I said. I don't want to be that guy. So I really try to be respectful in meetings. And that's the deal. But I think what that really means, because when you think of it objectively, what's the vainest use I could have of God's name? Wouldn't it be to pray for my will? I mean, when you think of it objectively, could there be anything vainer than Bob trying to instruct the creator of the universe how to do his job? I mean, that's pretty silly, isn't it? And yet, how many times do we do that? Especially, you get me scared. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pray for specifics. Make my daughter be okay. I hope this is only another imagined brain tumor. Or whatever the deal is. I hope the IRS audit goes well. I hope my friend doesn't has cancer or whatever. But it's very vain of me to do that, to instruct God. I don't have the big picture. Maybe everything that's happening is exactly the way it's supposed to happen. I suspect objectively that it is. But when self is involved, it doesn't look that way. And so I pray only for knowledge of His will. My dear friend and one of my very, very close friends who died a few years ago is a man named Clint Hodges. And Clint and I had exchanged some fifth steps. And I used to talk to him pretty regularly. I dearly miss him. And Clint used to say that there were three types of prayer. And prayer, all prayer was good, but each type was a little better than the one before. And he said the first type of prayer is a prayer that even atheist agnostics will say on occasion. And that's the help me prayer. The foxhole prayer. Help me God, and I'll never do that again. We have all said that at some point. And then the other prayer is the give me prayer, which is a fine prayer. The serenity prayer is a give me prayer. God grant me the serenity. But Clint said the ultimate prayer is simply the use me prayer. Just use me. Without prejudice, without opinion, thy will, not mine, be done. On the bottom of page 87, it says, we constantly remind ourselves we're no longer running the show. Constantly. Do you know why a guy like me has to constantly remind myself I'm no longer running the show? Because I'm constantly trying to run the show. It's so sneaky and so subtle. Because where do you run the show from? The control center right up here. Do you ever have the experience of going into a meeting and surrendered and loved everybody? Everybody looks cool. Everybody's good. And all of a sudden, it's weird. It's like a key turns in my head. Oh my God, what are they answering their cell phone in a meeting for? Oh, he drank four cups of coffee and didn't put a dollar in the basket. And I just climb right up onto the throne of judgment again and start playing God. And it's hard to know that when you think you're right. Now you've taken the traditions and the steps and what you consider proper behavior in Alcoholics Anonymous, and the ego is using that. is another vehicle for you to play God. And yet the separation always incurs. I separate myself from you through my judgment. And where we constantly remind ourselves we're no longer running the show because it is my default position. Don't make me a bad guy. It's just the hand I've been dealt. Katie.
Thanks, Bob. I'm Katie, alcoholic. Good morning. That was wonderful, Bob. These 10, 11, and 12 steps are very special. They were, as most of you know by now, there was nothing special really about the book for many, many years in my life, just because I just walked away from it, unbeknownst to me. And the way my life has changed today is amazing. Probably about 6 years ago, I had the most amazing awakening. Remember when I started, I said, this weekend can alter your recovery. Absolutely alter it. Some will walk away and just go, my God, that was fabulous, and kind of ride the crest of the wave. And not really pick up the book, not really get back into the work. And that's the person that's not in the work. And then some of you guys, it'll rock your world so much that you're in the work and you stay in the work. And it pushes you there. And then there's, of course, the group that's knee-deep in the work and just loves this like a sponge. But 6 years ago, I had an experience that was unbelievable. And shortly, I got an opportunity to have Mark Houston walk into our life. And he did a workshop that just, well, it blew us away. I mean, you know that Bose commercial where you're sitting in front of the TV and your hair is blowing back? And he must have said, the disciplines of 10, 11, 12, the disciplines of 10, 11, 12. And I thought, who is this guy? Man, what is he talking about? Would he shut up? I'm not doing it. And Mark is a Charlie sponsor, and unfortunately, he unexpectedly passed away Friday. And I don't know if any of y'all know Mark Houston, or if he touched your life in any way, but a very, very dear friend of ours, very special. After Friday night, when we went back to our room, we got the phone call. And we're honoring him today, especially in these steps of 10, 11, and 12. And Mark was instrumental in Charlie and I getting our lives back together. And as a matter of fact, inadvertently, when we got back into the program, that's how we met Bob. And we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension, and we will miss Mark terribly bad. So when we get home, we'll be hearing more and more about his legacy. And what we opted not to start the thing out Saturday morning with all that heartache and pain. If any of you guys were close to Mark or knew Mark well, he was quite a soldier in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he'd always say, we're his agents. We're God's agents. We carry the message. And I love that. And so it's hard to do the 10th step without thinking of Mark. One of the coolest deals is, and this is my experience, is this 11th step, I think, is so much of your own experience. It gives us a lot of freedom. And I'll tell you, there are some people out there, and myself included, the minute I have judgment, resentment and judgment are a very fine line to me. I can judge you and really think I'm very self-righteous, and really I have a good reason to judge you. You certainly need to be judged. Now, I don't really realize that that's also a form of resentment, right? Making me better than. And I really judged Eastern religion. I mean, the more you sat in the lotus position, I wanted to hit you upside the head with a frying pan. I mean, there was a level of, you got it and I don't, that Christianity can have, right? Beating you over the head with the Bible. I mean, it is exactly, you know, self-manifested in various ways. They're both the same. And so what I ended up realizing was, and I tried meditation over and over and over again, and my version of the 1960s, the Beatles, the Lotus Position, I was going nuts in my head. Absolutely nuts in my head. And counselors were trying to get me to meditate. I was going to these meditative things, and I just, you know, would open one eye and watch everybody and just think, so not happening, you know. And then when people were done, they were like, and I thought, right, I'm over here suicidal, you know, or mainly homicidal. And I really never was suicidal. I was homicidal, man. I'm crazy enough to kill both of us. And so when we started using the dictionary, you know, 6-7 years ago, it blew me away, 1935 dictionary. Now, the version that I was reading said that meditation was deep thought and contemplation. It doesn't say anything about completely clearing my mind to a flat spot for me. Now, if that's how you see deep thought, that's fine for you. For me, it doesn't work that way. And so one of the cool things, and this is, we were talking about this morning, is, you know, I would never want you to think that I am knocking an open discussion meeting. Ever. As a matter of fact, it would be self-righteous of me to say that all of a sudden now I've come to the other side and God save them. I will tell you my observation on that is, when I got sober, and we were talking about this morning, 25 years ago, the herd of Alcoholics Anonymous has changed today, as it was 25 years ago. When you were new 25 years ago, they threw you in the car, we're going bowling, we're going to have coffee. They didn't ask you if you want to have coffee. They said, get in the car. Get in the car, we're going to Coco's. Go here. And I remember sitting there just thinking, you know, and you're slamming down coffee and smoking and coffee and smoking and coffee and smoking. And I loved it. And they kept you in the center. It's kind of like how it takes a village to raise a kid. And that's not necessarily how it is today. And so, since our fellowship has shifted a bit, now you may still have that fellowship, but you're noticing you're not grabbing necessarily the new guy, right? You see that in the groups. And so, what I think is if you hear in the meetings, you'll hear some people say, well, you know, they'll get their chip or whatever, and they'll say, well, you know, I got 10 years of sobriety, and I hit my knees every morning and ask God to keep me sober, and I thank Him every night. Well, that sure is a simple 11th step, isn't it? Wow, that would only take about 4 lines, wouldn't it? I don't even see where it says that. It's a pretty condensed version. So if I hear anybody saying that, I'm always trying to say, you know, that's a great thing to do. Don't leave that piece out. Absolutely, thank God. But there's so much more, because this is not about the extraction of alcohol. It's the extraction of self. It's completing that third step. The hardest surrender in our existence is the surrender to self. And here's the bad news. We're blinded to it. So you're asking me to remove something I don't even see? I'm a little confused. So this step being so powerful, also I believe, I like to come at the misunderstandings that I had. Because I don't think I'm alone in this room. And I think if I can teach from what it says, take away my difficulties so the victor of them can bear witness to you. So I'm going to hope that if you're suffering from the same difficulties I am, you can hear how I began this process. And so what we've got is we've got this 11th step. Well, I thought, well, maybe this should work. Certainly I just need to get closer to God. Now, keep in mind, I'm so heavily blocked. I'm so full of judgment. I'm so full of, you talk about the guy who's not putting a buck in the basket, or so-and-so at the AA meeting. I won't even say his name in case he ever hears this CD. but oh, no, sir. And yeah, there's nothing worse than realizing you said something on the recording. But I swear this guy would share it. At one point, he was sharing. I'm over there deep breathing like I'm in labor. And this guy next to me goes, "Man, are you going to be okay?" And I thought, that's how obvious I was. That this guy just sharing bothered me. Yes, I'm assuming I'm in the right room. Okay? And that's that level of judgment is not good. Not good at all. The program's got plenty of work for me to do in this area. And what... I don't know where I was going with that one. I'm a little fried. I'm sorry. I was just thinking of him again, and that's probably... I'm sure I... Is there an amends, Bob, I need to make somewhere?
Just inside.
Thank you. Speaking of, Bob has suggested I run a little thing in the paper to see if I can find my road rage boy several years ago. I can't wait to see all the people that know me that'll read that.
You might have a deluge of responses.
I know. Oh, talk about step on your own tail. So it says, I love this because, see, once again, like I said, the waters get muddy between 10 and 11. And I think they only got muddy because of the 12 and 12. I don't think it was ever intentional. But everybody will say that they do a 10th step at night. Right? You'll hear that. I will always correct that in an AA meeting. Because now that is my job. If you're saying a step wrong in AA, I'm gonna correct that in an AA meeting. As a matter of fact, we were at a meeting. Speaking of, this woman did the meeting on. She chaired the meeting on step zero. I did have to leave the room because I thought, oh, whew. You know, she asked us also the people who share a lot to not share. And I just saw a bomb going off in the room, and it was just a little difficult, so I had to go in and out of the room numerous times. But when the 10th step is mentioned as the evening review, it is not the evening review. The evening review is exactly what Bob said. By nature, I'll bump across a lot of stuff. And it tells me right here, it says that we... when we are looking at our evening, right, it gives us such a beautiful layout. We do it written only because that's what was suggested to us. I do like to do a written inventory. Now, I'll tell you, I go in and out of it. I don't do this faithfully. As a matter of fact, I was just faithful to it for 2 years, and then I have backed off of it for 6 months. And then I'll re-bring it back in. It's like what Bob said. We shift and we move in this step a whole lot. And so... we have it laid out in a page, and you put what the chronicles of your day were, because I don't know about you, but it's hard for me to remember my whole day. It's hard for me to remember what exactly I did, where I went, who I was short with, if I don't write my chronicles of my day to the right side. And of course, there's a check and balance, and I love the 12 and 12 says that. He says, you know, don't put everything in red. We did a lot of good things. And so we go through our day, and then we make, it says in the book, corrective measures. That's a very important part. Don't leave that out. Because once again, grading your own paper is a very dangerous place to go. So your corrective measures need to be followed up. And the line I love that says, we don't drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. Oh my gosh, how many of you guys can go to morbid reflection like that? I mean, when my disease... When the disease of self is all over me, it never paints a pretty picture up here. It never says, oh my gosh, Katie, that noise in your car is probably nothing. Just ignore it. Right? It's like, oh, I bet that's the engine. God dang it, I just paid this car off. Now I'm going to have to get another car payment. Oh my God, and I won't get any trade in on this. It'll probably cost me $1,000 just to get, you know what I mean? I mean, and it just, I haven't even gone from one red light to another. bad. Heaping. And it says, I love this, it says, but we must be careful. And what did the word, in early sobriety people said there are no musts in the big book. It was like, I bet you one guy said that. One guy said that at one meeting. And we are all standing on the firing line correcting that one guy's statement. But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. The minute I work with sponsees, I'll hear them, I'll go, ho-ho, sounds like worry. Sounds like morbid reflection, man. Because, why? Not because I'll feel bad. Absolutely, it never says that really anywhere. I mean, I'm sure we could figure out somewhere it says about remorse, then we were hard on, we felt bad. But the truth of the matter is it would diminish my usefulness to others. How many of you guys have gone into worry and there's somebody hurting at a meeting and you couldn't help them if your life depended on it because I'm over here so consumed with self? See, the minute I love the back rows one, right over here. Like, I was telling a sponsee I was talking to, she's all broke up about this relationship that's seeming to look fine. Right? I mean, it looks fine to me. But in her mind, they're breaking up. Now, they're not. But in her mind, they are. And she is a darn good soldier in AA. And I said, whoa, what's your usefulness to others looking like? She goes, God, I'm so self-consumed. I said, start just speed dialing your sponsees right now. Because there was no meeting right at the time for her to go to. I said, speed dialing. Get out of self, man. You have got to do this to get out of self. Because how many of you guys, especially I like that Bob does the spring of the neck, you got a relationship issue, you got a child issue, or you got a job issue. How well is that prayer working for you? I mean, I can't even stay focused long enough to say, God, help me. It's just like a battlefield. It's just like, trying to get oil off of you with no soap. I'm going to have to go help somebody. Now, in order for me to do that, so it says when we drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, you got to have somebody almost go like this. Pull you by the shirt up. Get a hold of yourself, man. You're like, whoa. Okay. Sorry about that. It's kind of losing it there. Now, go back out there. Right? Because, if you go into this, well, I understand that you're concerned and, you're scared for me. I remember my sponsor coming at me. When I got a hold of my sponsor, I was the only one she was sponsoring at the time. And I got to tell you, I got pretty resentful when she got real active in AA. Because all of a sudden, all these other girls were clearly taking way too much of my time with her. And I was like, fourth or fifth on the list to be called back. And she was, she has a tendency to be very gentle. I'm not that way. I'm tell you the facts, I tell you the solution, we move on, blah, blah, blah. And, I've always felt I'm a female version of Clancy, and I'm not trying to be like Clancy, we just have the same DNA. And, one of the things is that she was telling me about a character defect I had, I'm sharing a problem, and she was really soft-selling it to me. And I could tell that she'd been working with a lot of other people that she's kind of got this little way too soft self. And I said, oh, for God's sakes, Marty, just tell me. Give me the facts. Tell me myself and let me get on with this deal. And she goes, okay. And I mean, it was like she just opened that hose and just hosed me down. And I thought, thank you. Give me the solution and let me get on my way. I got it. And that is the approach I like, because the truth of the matter is when I'm calling my sponsor, I'm calling her to tell me, how did I set the ball rolling? So my troubles are of my own making. I have got to have somebody step up. Like, don't soft sell me. Man, we're talking, my day's ruined. Right? You give me even an inkling of a soft sell and I'll take it. And that's what this is talking about, is that, looking at the corrective measures of the day. Self-pity is so painful. Call it worry. Call it remorse. Call it morbid reflection. It's self-pity. Right? Bob has always said, self-pity and depression, kind of a very fine line, right? And now I'm not talking clinical depression. I'm not going into that whole hotbed of opinion. But I'll tell you that 99% of the time you will not be able to lob out that you're depressed to me. You are in self-pity. Period. And we'll go from there. And so it says upon awakening. And this is the part where it really is very, very interesting. Now, in a big book study, we're studying the book. But when I am speaking for an hour telling my story somewhere, I ask everybody, I said, the book is very clear on direction all through the book. It tells you to continue, 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 continue. It never says ride the crest of the wave. So when you leave here, it says continue to do what you learned here. You came here to learn. Do not take this experience and set it back on the shelf. And it says, upon awakening, let us think about our 24 hours ahead. There's the first thing you're supposed to do. So when I'm in a large group, I'll say there are several things you're supposed to do. You're supposed to ask God to divorce you from three things. What are they? And I said, I'll give you a minute to think about them. Okay, now let's all say them together. And the room sounds like they're trying to say the seventh-step prayer. Hopefully somebody next to me will say it. And it's like, you can see how removed from an entire step they are. Same way I was. I did not meditate, so I removed the 11th step. I said it at a meeting one time. The meeting was on meditation. Personally, that's a dangerous meeting. You know, everybody's got a lot of opinion in there, or a meeting on God. You know, everybody gets all flared up. And I remember saying, I can't meditate, so I just removed that step. It was about 12 years ago. And I was completely comfortable. Nobody came up to me and said, wow, have you looked at, you know, not that they should have. I made sure I went to very unhealthy meetings. That everybody's like, good for you. Good for you. I don't blame you. Let's throw that step away. And that meeting remained at 10 people and never grew. That's also another good indicator. It wasn't like, you know, it was 50 people in that room. My experience. So it says upon awakening, let's think about our day. How many of you guys wake up? Now, some of you guys wake up and roll out of bed. I am not that person. I wake up and lay there. And I go, okay, God, me and you, let's think about the day. And what I have to do is I got to think about my day and how I operate in my day. Because I'm always looking to be all my ducks in a row. Don't get in my way. Don't screw up my time. You know what I mean? And so when I said this at a big book study we were at a while back, this guy came up to me and said, my God, every morning when I wake up, my mission is to beat this other guy to work so I can get the better truck.
Wow.
Yeah, he was unaware of that. Now, how would you like to have that little flamethrower at your butt first thing in the morning? There's no thinking about God, no thinking about nothing. Just get your ass out of bed and get that good truck. And then if you don't get the truck, I'm sure he was delightful to spend the rest of the day with. See, and that's what this whole deal, my life today, I don't even see it the same. I'm not even the same person. I mean, when Bob said that third level when he was talking to Clint is about helping others. I did another thing, like I said, the ebbs and flows of prayer and meditation and how my morning goes and what I actually do in my morning time. I used to write a letter to God kind of from the Oxford group. And I look back at it and I've got journals this much of just real quick writing to God. I'm not this heavy journal person. Some of you guys are. Once again, I've got strong judgment on that, so I'll leave that alone. But I wrote to God, and every time it said, help me help others. On every one of them. And I hadn't seen that until I went back and read them. And I went, I'm a different person today. My whole goal in life is to help others. I don't know about you, but that was not of my DNA. And so, I'm laying there in bed and I'm thinking about my 24 hours ahead and what I've got to do and who I've got to think about. And, you know, I've got a business deal over here. There's a situation I got in business that someone new has come in, causes me some fear. They've got the let's put it this way, they have the authority. I'm self-employed, but I rent the facility from them. They have the authority to give me, be a pain in my ass, if you want to be, tell it like it is. And so I have to be careful and pray for them and pray for their concern and their new job and their fears, because it's all about me otherwise. What if he does, and what if he says, and what if he doesn't like me, and then he's going to do this, and oh my God, and I already could tell the minute I met him, our personalities were, I'm the kind of woman that a man either likes me or he doesn't. You know what I mean? My personality, either you like me or you don't. It's black or white. And so I had to really, really keep this guy in the forefront of my mind. Because man, you scare me bad enough, and you know, I'll let the air out of your tire. Actually, I won't physically do it now, but I'll sure think about it. That's the way I think, if you scare me bad enough. So, we've got self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. Isn't it interesting there that it doesn't say divorce me from fear? I really believe that there is a great misunderstanding of fear, and I've mentioned it several times. We are not here to manage our fear. We are here to... the root of our problem is selfish and self-centered. It's not fear. We're driven by the fear. So we only want to get back halfway. So, self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. That means that we can help people. That's the bottom line, is that we're helping. It says our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. That's what it's talking about. My thought life is about helping others. And it was interesting. I celebrated 25 years back in October. Very big birthday. Charlie's getting ready to celebrate 25 years, and I have one of my sponsees here, Trish. And Charlie goes, you know, Katie, we really didn't do a big celebration for your 25 years. And I thought, I knew we didn't do a big celebration. I just wasn't feeling it, you know, a big party or whatever. And Trish looked at me, and she lives in Atlanta, and she goes, remember we did my fifth step on the phone? And I remember, I looked at Charlie, and I said, he goes, what do you want to do? And I go, I think I want to do that fifth step with Trish. See, I'm a new person, guys. 8 years ago, we're having a big party for me. Now, don't get me wrong. My 50th birthday party was very, very big. But my 80th birthday party was to do that inventory with Trish on the phone. And I'd already forgotten about it. And she goes, we did my inventory. See, I touched her and didn't even know it. Just put it aside. Didn't carry that one around so I could wave that flag and go, look how good I am. I'd already forgotten about it. Of course, I will tell y'all. But, and I just love you to death. A couple other things is in the prayer and meditation, I do a whole group of stuff. I do a thing called positive prayer. Positive prayer to me looks like this. I put out there, instead of sitting in silence, which clearly is not my cup of tea, clearly is not my cup of tea, I pray for a host of people. And I take each individual and I say they are in good health, they're an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's called positive prayer. Because let me tell you, this baby's negative, right? I'm just filling it with positive. My daughter worries a lot. My daughter is calm, cool, and collective in all affairs. She has a great relationship with her creator. You know, I'm just constantly going into all that. And then at the end, I will take me and I'll ask God for all the things the book asks for. I ask for inspiration, intuitive thought. I say, give me the knowledge, give me the trust, give me the understanding, the willingness, the strength to handle a lot of sponsees, right? That takes a lot of work. A lot of sponsees takes a lot of work, a lot of patience. And so that is what my morning looks like. I always start my morning off with a little reading. I'm a big fan of Emmett Fox. That's my choice. You can do whatever. You heard Bob go down his regimen of everything he's done. I told you, formal education and I did not mix. Period. Still doesn't. 52 years old, the thought of going and watching history in another country, well, it repulses me. And that is not using a gentle word. If anyone's ever been with me in Europe, I'm like, you know, if you show me one more cathedral, I'm going to throw up. And history is so not my deal. You cannot give me five spiritual leaders. I cannot switch from Eckhart Tolle to Thomas Bruton to Emmett Fox to C.S. Lewis to it'll make me crazy because I don't have that kind of a brain. So I found Emmett and I like him. I'm not budging until I hear God clearly say, try someone else. And one of the things in his book that I study, it says there are 3 degrees of prayer and meditation. And I know he was an influence in the Oxford movement. It says the first is just to pray out loud. The second is meditation, contemplation, to take a couple of words and sit with them, to take a verse from somewhere and sit with it. It says the third one is called contemplation. And that's where you really become one. He says most people never achieve that. Isn't that kind of a relief? Most people never achieve that. I like that because I thought, thank you. I don't want to have to try to achieve that. Then, as you're moving on, it says, we have a few said prayers. And out of these few said prayers, they're the third step and the seventh step. It says, if you're having any trouble, here's some prayers. The third step and the seventh step are powerful when broken down. The other thing he cautions you is be careful of a prayer that you use a lot of because it just becomes words. Blah, 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 blah. So he's talking about that. And then the one last thing that I'll end on is, when it says, as we go through the day, we pause when agitated. Isn't that how most of us have always heard that line? Well, there's two more words. It says, or doubtful. Not just agitated. There is doubt. I am doubtful throughout my day. Should I call them back? Should I not? Should I go here? Should I not? Right? And it says, we ask for the right thought or action. That's pretty heavy duty. And then it just, you know, we constantly remind ourselves that we're no longer running the show. It says, we are undisciplined. We let God discipline us. The one thing too that it says here, it says on when we face indecision. Here we ask God for inspiration, intuitive thought, or decision. It says we relax and take it easy. When it says we relax and take it easy, it's telling me right there that that's a promise. If you cannot relax and take it easy on most of the stuff, we probably need to get into some more unblocking because we're probably too blocked because we have self coming in. Okay, Bob.
Let's take a quick less than 10-minute break. So we want to get into the last.